On November 4th, voters will pick one of four candidates to fill the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Democrat Tim Johnson, who's retiring at the end of his term. Former Governor Mike Rounds is the Republican, Rick Wyland the Democrat. There are two candidates running as independents, former Republican Senator Larry Pressler and former Republican State Legislator Gordon Howey from Rapid City. We've invited all the U.S. Senate candidates on Dakota Midday, and joining us today is Gordon Howey, who's with us from our studios at the Dahl Arts Center in Rapid City. And Mr. Howey, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today.
I'm looking forward to it, Carl. Nice to be with you.
Now, I know you've been traveling across the state with your campaign. For those of you who haven't had the opportunity to meet you, how do you introduce yourself, and what is it you want people to know about you?
Well, I introduce myself by saying that if I were not running in this election, I don't think I could vote for any of these other candidates. They're nice enough fellows, but they just represent more of the same policies, more of the same direction. And frankly, America can't afford more of the same direction. We need someone to step up who's willing to take a principled position and say, enough is enough. We need to turn our country back to the principles that made us great in the first place.
And what do you see are those principles?
Well, I believe a foundation of faith, freedom, and purpose kind of identifies where we would believe this country needs to go. Our country was based or founded on Judeo-Christian principles. And the farther away we turn from those principles, the more we become self-serving, the more we become intent on political expediency. And I am weary of politicians in this nation, Democrats and Republican, who are more concerned about the next election than they are the next generation. So I'm just offering South Dakotans what I believe is a better choice. I'm someone who's got a clear record of defense of the unborn, of being a fiscal hawk, someone who believes that we need to cut spending, we need to reduce debt, and we need to stop government growth. We won't do those things if we send more of the same kind of people with the same mindset.
When you say that one of the problems is that politicians are more interested in the next election than worried about the next generation. That almost sounds like your candidacy, Mr. Howey, would be maybe one term if you were elected U.S. Senate.
Well, you know, I'm not focused on term limits, but I'm not looking beyond this election. When I served in the state house, I could have served 4 years, 8 years actually, four terms. I chose to serve two terms. When I served in the state Senate, I could have done the same thing. I chose to serve 2 years. Why did I do that? Because I believe that I had done the things that I needed to do, and it was time for new people, fresh ideas. And frankly, I don't buy the idea that this institutional knowledge serves us well. What I saw in Pierre and what I see in our nation's capital is these professional career politicians who are looking toward their next election serve themselves rather than their constituents.
What was the reason you got involved in politics to begin with when you were running for the state legislature?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question. I don't get asked that very much, but I was a businessman. I was enjoying a successful business life. And every day when I would open the newspaper in South Dakota, I'd see something that frustrated me even more. What pushed me over the line and caused me to say I'm going to get involved in politics is when then-Governor Rounds vetoed the first abortion ban, and all the while claiming to be a pro-life politician. And I just said, you know, enough is enough. I know there are people who disagree with me on the issue of life, but frankly, I think it's only fair that we talk straight to the people of South Dakota. And I saw political doublespeak, and on that particular issue especially, and it just aggravated me enough to get me engaged.
Well, Mr. Howey, one of the things that you've mentioned in your campaign, you even had an ad earlier this summer saying that politicians need to put God back in politics, and that raises an interesting question. What role do you believe religion should play in politics?
Well, I think Daniel Webster said it best. He said, whatever makes men good Christians also makes them good citizens. What he was talking about is the character of a man. And what I'm talking about is the character of the people we send to Washington, D.C. I'm not suggesting that, Carl, you should be a member of the Church of England or anything like that. What I'm saying is our country became great because it was based on solid moral principle. And we have moved away from that. We've abandoned the principles of our founding fathers when it comes to morality in government. You know, we hear people say you can't legislate morality. Well, what's the alternative? You legislate immorality. And I believe that people who prefer a different kind of life and who either have a different faith or no faith at all should have equal representation. They should be free in America. But what we see is the farther we depart from those Judeo-Christian principles that made us great, the more freedom we lose as a people. And until we acknowledge that we aren't smart enough to solve some of these problems from the mess we're in right now, we need to do what George Washington did. Our first president, when he was inaugurated, led the entire congregation, I would call it, but some would call it the Congress, led the entire Congress to a little church that still stands where the Twin Towers used to stand, and they prayed. Now, there's no shame in that. I'm not ashamed to say I'm a believer and that I pray, and that without divine guidance and intervention, our nation is in trouble so deep that it may not recover.
And for those who disagree with you or are not Christian and maybe don't even believe in God at all, how do you engage them, or how do you form coalitions with them when you're talking about values and trying to create this moral approach to politics and government that you're talking about?
Well, even people who don't share my particular faith or who do not have a faith will agree that if you do not have a foundation of principle, you have a very weak foundation. And we need to begin to build coalitions. And I just recently filmed a half-hour program with one of my adversaries in this campaign, Rick Weiland. We sat down without a moderator for 30 minutes, and we discussed the issues. People could see very clearly what our differences are, but we did it in a civil way because we approached it with the principle that South Dakotans have the right to know, and politicians or people seeking political office have the obligation to talk straight. And that is where principle comes in. If honesty and integrity is something that's sorely lacking in our nation's capital, I think most of the people we talk to around the state of South Dakota are saying they are weary of being dealt with deceptively. They're weary of people being more concerned about their own political career than they are about the children and grandchildren of this state and this nation.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting, and we're talking with Gordon Howie, who is an independent candidate for U.S. Senate. You mentioned the televised conversation with your opponent, Democrat Rick Weiland. One of the differences, major differences between conservatives and liberals, is the role of government. What do you see should be the role of government in this country?
Well, government should be the servant of the people, not the master. And we have seen the overreaching arm of the federal government impact our lives in nearly every area. You know, we hear about the EPA wanting to take control of mud puddles, for heaven's sakes. And we know the Federal Reserve is creating tens of millions of dollars, probably hundreds of millions of dollars every day, devaluing the money in the pockets of the person who waits tables at the local restaurant or the clerk at Walmart. And we see that continued devaluation. Why do we see it? Because government has become a greedy, overreaching, I don't even know the appropriate word in public. I'm disgusted with government, and I think we need to put government on a diet. frankly, if we do not put a lid on federal spending and a lid on federal debt, there is no motivation for these politicians to come to the table and prioritize spending. Right now, I saw on the news the other day, our government used about $4 million of our tax dollars to study the effect of alcohol on monkeys. Now, give me a break. When we have government thinking that that should be a role of tax use of taxpayer dollars, we have gone well over the edge. And I think it's time government was put on a diet. You don't prioritize spending unless you set a limit on spending. These folks in D.C. have no concept of what really goes on around the dining room table where mom and dad are sitting trying to balance their budgets. Because in D.C., you don't have to worry about that sort of thing. There's just a never-ending stream of revenue. That needs to stop.
Are there certain programs that you see when you're talking about prioritizing spending, places that you see should be cut? I know you mentioned the study about alcohol monkeys, but other more prominent programs that you think should be cut?
Well, I believe that we could make a list, but here's the problem. We get our focus misdirected when we talk about here are the 10 programs I'd like to see reduced. Here's the 10 programs I'd like to see increased. And the reason that derails the conversation is because it takes us away from the fundamental issue. The primary issue has to be we have to limit spending and limit debt, because only then will these politicians have any motivation to come to the table and begin that hard work of prioritizing where the money goes and, frankly, where it comes from. And right now, we just continue to give Congress a blank check. They continue to spend more money than they take in. We see our taxes going up, our value of our money going down. And so to prioritize on this program the things that I would increase or the things I would decrease, I think diverts us from the major objective. And that objective has to be that we start by putting a lid on debt and a lid on spending.
So you put the limit there, and then you go from there and decide, okay, this is what we need, and this is what maybe we don't need so much.
Well, yes, and then there are going to be some hard choices, and some of us will be very uncomfortable with some of those choices. But we don't have the option to spend in an unrestrained fashion the way we've been spending. That leads us into economic chaos. Right now, we know the national debt is $18 trillion. But what most people don't know is that there's $130 to $150 trillion in unfunded liabilities. And the list keeps growing. The debt keeps growing. While we've talked on this program, the debt has continued to grow. And I would be someone who would take a message to the United States Congress and to the president of this country and say, I don't care about political expediency. I don't care about my political future. I care about the future of this nation. And we're going to limit spending, and we're going to put a cap on government growth.
Now, if you're elected to the U.S. Senate, you'll have to tackle and deal with international issues. And last week, President Obama outlined his strategy for defeating ISIS, which included airstrikes in Syria and increasing the number of military advisors in Iraq. What is your position on the president's strategy? Is he moving in the right direction?
I think you can define the president's strategy very simply: too little, too late. I think he needs to get off the golf course and get back in the Oval Office where we elected him to serve. We didn't elect him to be on the third green. And I understand everybody needs a day off, but I mean, give me a break. When Americans are being beheaded, you don't take that day off. You deal with the issue. And the issue is very simply, we have an adversary that wants to destroy our country. There are a couple of things that the president does, he seems to be totally inept to do with regard to foreign policy. He's inept at protecting the mainland. He's allowed hundreds of thousands of undocumented illegal aliens to come across our borders, many of whom have ties to these terrorist organizations that are beheading Americans and others in other parts of the world. They are coming across our border, and we're doing little, if anything, to stop them. The first thing we have to do is to protect the homeland. That means we secure our national borders. I find it very interesting that the border between Mexico and the United States seems to be intact if you're going south. Someone goes accidentally across the border into Mexico, they're incarcerated, and then our president does nothing to get them out. But the point is, Mexico can protect and preserve their border, their northern border, and that same border we let hundreds of thousands of people across. This is America, the United States of America. We have the ability to secure our borders. What we don't have is a political leader who has the will to do it and a Congress who has the backbone to stand up and insist on it.
Too little, too late, you said, for the president's approach to ISIS and the Middle East. But still, something needs to be done there regarding that situation. I mean, what do you foresee of the best way that the U.S. can deal with what is happening right now on the ground there?
Well, the first thing you do not do when you have an enemy that wants to destroy you, you do not make a list of the things that you won't do. And that's what our president did. He said, we're not going to have boots on the ground. Well, maybe we're not. Maybe we will. Maybe we won't. But you don't make a proclamation to the world and to your enemy that you're removing that as an option. Every option has to remain on the table. And this president just does not get it. I'm sorry. He's our president, and we need to respect the office, but I believe he is totally incompetent in dealing with our national economy and our national foreign policy, our national security interests. If he would even start by doing what he talks about doing, that might be a good first step. But he's drawn lines in the sand and then just goes on about his golf game and doesn't do anything proactive. I believe that we have an enemy that wants to destroy us. So what do we do? His foreign policy is to release their leaders so they can go back and join the forces. My attitude is you need to find out where they are. And believe me, we have a defense system with national intelligence that is second to none. We have good national intelligence. So we need to use it. We need to use it. We in the Ukraine, we wouldn't even share it with our friends. When Putin was invading the Ukraine, America wouldn't even share in military intelligence with them. I think that is despicable. We need to support our friends, and then we need to find out where these people are. We need precision-focused strikes. We need to take them out, because this isn't something where you can negotiate your way through it. You cannot negotiate with someone who has a knife to your throat. The only thing you can do is take them out, and we have to do that to these ISIS leaders. And now the focus seems to be, do you call them ISIS or ISIL? I mean, good grief. Let's call them gone.
You're listening to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. My guest is Gordon Howie, who's an independent Senate candidate. And one of the issues, Mr. Howie, that's come up during this campaign, local issue, and come up in both the governor's race and the U.S. Senate race, given former Governor Mike Rounds' role in the EB-5 program. It's the EB-5. I'm wondering if, from your perspective, how important the discussion of EB-5 is in this race and when we're talking about the important issues of the day.
It's important on two fronts. One, it's important because South Dakotans deserve to know where all these millions of dollars went, who got them, who benefited. And it's also important because we need to send people to Washington, D.C. that we can trust. And I'm just saying, can you trust someone who will not testify under oath about a program that is replete with corruption, greed, and graft? This is the stuff that horror movies is made out of. We've got a man who who apparently killed himself by shooting himself in the stomach with a shotgun. He was the governor's cabinet secretary. We have another man close to the government who was in charge, who created a company with which he made millions of dollars. And the governor just signs off on this stuff. Now he says he's fully cooperating, but he won't testify. I think that should be an alarm bell for South Dakota voters. Do we really want that kind of representation in Washington, D.C.? I mean, for heaven's sakes, let's show up for debates and have an open and clear discussion about the issues. But apparently, if you have $9 million, you don't have to show up. And you don't have to explain greed, corruption, and graft.
Now you're referring to your opponent, Mike Rounds, not showing
last
up in debates.
Last check, he's the only one with that much money.
Now, looking at this campaign so far, are there certain issues that, as you've traveled around the state, other than the ones that we've been talking about today that have really resonated with South Dakota voters, or things that that are important to them that maybe others haven't been talking about?
You know, what I see is a general dissatisfaction with the other candidates, and there's been some fear and intimidation by Republican elites that, oh my goodness, if you vote for Gordon Howey, we'll lose the Senate and the world as we know it will end. Well, here's a newsflash for them. Political analysts across the country are saying not only will the Republicans get the needed 6 seats, but they're likely to get between 8 and 11 seats. So South Dakota has an opportunity to determine what kind of Republican they want to send to the United States Senate. And I have a clear record of conservative values, both socially and fiscally. And frankly, my record demonstrates that I don't just talk about those things, I believe them. Then we have a former governor who nearly doubled the state budget, increased your taxes, left us with a $127 or $37 million deficit and an EB-5 mess that stinks to heaven. Then we have a former politician who's already been in Congress in the Senate for 3 terms, and how much better off are we because of that? I guess I'm not so sure. Then we have a Democrat who was closely connected with the likes of Tom Daschle and liberal politicians who arguably were important players in getting us into this mess economically that we're in. So I just find the most significant issue is people are saying, my goodness, I can't support any of those people. And so I am the other guy. And I would encourage people to look at my record. And I've been available to answer the hard questions. I've taken nothing off the table. Any question you want to ask me, have at it, because the voters of South Dakota have a right to know. And I don't see that happening in some of the other campaigns.
So even though you're running as an independent, you are still a Republican?
I have never left the Republican Party in principle. I support the Republican Party platform. And the ironic part about that is I'm the only candidate in the race who does.
All right. Well, Mr. Howey, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us on Dakota Midday.
Carl, thank you. It's been a pleasure.